Tucson Electric Power Company began recognizing customers with BrightT Awards 5 years ago to promote awareness of its energy efficiency programs, which help customers save energy while producing substantial environmental benefits. And you know I love that. Award recipients have demonstrated their leadership in sustainability efforts, and by recognizing those efforts or those organizations, TEP, hopes their achievements will inspire others to follow in their footsteps. Stay with me to hear about the 2018 Sustainability Partner of the Year, the Nature Conservancy. Hey, everybody, I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and we're going to get down to earth celebrating Tucson Electric Power Company's partners in sustainability. This show is the first of our BrightT Awards Spotlight Series, and we are indeed ready to celebrate with our in-studio guest and the impactful organization which he represents. Please join me in welcoming Patrick Graham, State Director of the Nature Conservancy in Arizona. Pat, it's great to have you here. I've never had you here, but we have done an interview with you. So I was reminiscing about that and the changes that have occurred in the years you were on in 2012. So it's like time flies when you're having fun.
Well, I'm so glad you're doing what you're doing, and congratulations on the growth of your listenership. It's incredible. So important, the message.
It's so important now more than ever. And believe me, our whole team feels that urgency. And, you know, one of my heroes is a man named Seth Godin, and I read his blog every day. He's probably the most famous business blogger. He writes a blog every single day, 365 days a year. And one of his mantras is, if you believe in what you're doing, just keep showing up. And Mrs. Greensworld just kept showing up and showing up and showing up and going to conferences and getting the word out there. And now we're doing things like sponsoring national conferences in D.C. in April. So if you just keep showing up, and the work has become even more passionate and important given some of the latest reports that we both know about.
Right. Yeah.
It's like we've got a big hill to climb.
We do.
So the Nature Conservancy was selected for this award because of your overall commitment to sustainability, no surprise there, which basically mirrors your mission to conserve the land and water on which all life depends. I mean, what an impactful statement. The land and the water on which all life depends. Everybody listening to that? So tell us more about the Nature Conservancy and your mission and how you work to achieve it. I know that's a big question, but this is the overview, and then we'll get down in the weeds, so to speak, about some more specific initiatives.
Yeah, I think people first got to know us when we were out purchasing land and creating nature preserves so people could protect those lands and visit them. At the time, when you read our first mission statement, it was more like we were setting those lands aside almost like a museum.
Yes.
So that future generations could see them. What we came to recognize is that no matter how many acres of land we set aside, it was still going to be influenced by things happening outside of those boundaries. So we began to broaden our view, and we really took our mission seriously. And now we're one of the leading conservation organizations in the world, working on five continents and in over 70 countries around the world. We work on everything from preserving coral reefs and protecting our oceans to climate change to the health of our forests and rivers here in Arizona.
And it makes me think about, I wish you had purchased half the world. I mean, that's really a bit of a stretch, but the lands that you preserve, and I was sharing with you, since my husband and I were really young, there's a place here in Arizona, Ramsey Canyon, where it is just stepping into a bit of magic, and the wildlife is still there, the ringtail cats, the Coatimundis, the deer, and you just can take a right-hand turn and go into a nature abyss. I mean, it's pretty impressive.
It really is.
I'm glad you purchased that piece. Okay, thank you very much, because we've had many picnics and our kids have been down there, and there used to be water running all the time. I don't know if it is. The last time we went,
it's still pretty regular.
It's pretty good, and that's for us Arizonans. Anywhere you can go where there's running water, it makes you have a happy day.
Cool place in the summer.
So you do have, and I want to underscore that you are one of the, if not the largest global conservation organizations in the world, and you do have different challenges in different parts of the country. And of course, the Southwest provides always a unique set of challenges because of our arid climate, our intense heat in the summer. So what are you specifically doing on as the head person in charge and with a great team of people? What are you doing in Arizona?
Well, you know, it's interesting because a lot of people, even people that have lived here their whole life, don't realize how diverse Arizona is in terms of nature. We're the third most biologically diverse state in the United States, the most diverse state without a coastline in the United States. So it's a really special place. Even though it's in a dry, arid part, it really has tremendous diversity in terms of mammals and birds and plants. So it's a really big challenge.
We have everything from saguaros to skiing.
Yeah, right.
I mean, seriously, right. Like the arid landscape in Tucson, 45 minutes to be at 8,500 feet, and there's Flagstaff and Prescott. I mean, really greener areas too. So it is, you're right. It's not all the desert like the ride between Tucson and Phoenix.
Yeah, well, it's diverse culturally, it's diverse geographically, and it's certainly diverse in its nature. So the areas that we've focused on right now, I think are the issues related to growth. You know, we went through a recession that really sort of tamped down growth, but it's starting to come back again. And so the question isn't if we're going to grow, it's how we're going to grow. Can we grow in a way that's responsible and try to protect the most important areas that we have? Water. Water is critical when you're living in the Southwest, and it's a big focus of ours. Sustaining our last remaining desert rivers, the San Pedro, the Verde River, places like that are a big deal. Working on the Colorado River system in the whole and trying to reconnect that to the Gulf of California is a big part of what we're trying to do. The forests, we sometimes forget that water in those rivers has to come from somewhere. And when it falls on snow on those forests, that becomes really the source both of wildlife habitat, but also of the water that feeds a lot of our communities. So we're really trying to do a lot of work to try to restore our forests, get them back into a condition where they can survive. And the big issue really is our changing climate, and because it really affects every one of the others. The drought that's creating the crisis on the Colorado River today, if you look back historically, about 50% of the impact of the current drought is a result of changing climate.
So there's that. And, you know, when you talk about it, some things always remind me that our cabin burned in the Wallow Fire. And we had people from the Nature Conservancy come out after that and look at our land and talk about what the future would look like in terms of replanting. It was such a powerful fire that they said, you're not going to see big trees growing on this in your lifetime, because I wasn't 12. Mm-hmm. And so when it hits home like that, these words take on new meaning, and it was one of the most mega fires, 563,000 acres. But the Nature Conservancy was very much involved in steps going forward, because I have followed that in partnerships and how we can make sure that there's never another wildfire, because things are scary. So, yes, climate change, record high temperatures, rising sea levels, increased storms, catastrophic wildfires, the list goes on. These and other climate impacts are costing us billions of dollars in damaged infrastructure, lost business income, reduced productivity. From your perspective, what do we have to do to combat this big, bad reality and help communities thrive? There's a piece of this that's not just about, you know, mitigating climate change, but thrive is a good word to look forward instead of just surviving.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's really the key, is that, you know, I think historically people have, you know, you've seen this division, almost sort of a combat between protecting the environment or a healthy economy, and that's really a false choice. You really, our economy is interdependent with the health of our environment. We all are. And so it's really about how we connect those things together. And so a lot of the debate over climate is over really who caused it, and it's almost really irrelevant
the
at this point.
The point is moot. Seriously, the point is moot.
It's really irrelevant.
Who cares?
Yeah. I mean, there's no question the levels of carbon we have in the atmosphere. And so the real challenge now is how do we reduce the level of carbon and keep it from continuing to increase. Clean energy is really at the heart of that, making the shift to a low-carbon economy. And so that's what we're really starting to hone in on. It's interesting because the big source that's often talked about, of course, is coal and utility generation, but that's on its way out. It's just not economical anymore. So coal is being displaced, but really, what's going to take its place, and how do we build that system? It's a lot more complicated than sometimes it's made out to be.
Always, it's not a silver bullet. I mean, seriously, people ask for answers, and I'm like, yeah, it's complicated. That's right. Usually my answer.
So what we're doing right now is we're working to pull together a group of people from across the state that have knowledge in this issue and these issues, everything from, utility to transportation. Soon, at least in the Phoenix metro area, the largest source of carbon is going to be from automobiles, not from – it already is within the county itself.
Right.
So we can't just look at energy production from that perspective. We have to look at the entire economy, and that includes the transportation. So we're looking at that. How do you accelerate the adoption of electric vehicles as part of the solution? And then natural solutions. We published a study about two years ago that said that one-third of the solution to global warming can be done through nature. Avoided deforestation, reforestation, soil management. In the Midwest, we've turned once rich organic soils into almost barren soils. So we've got a big program called, really focused on healthy soils to try to restore the health of those forests and make them not only good for growing crops, but a source of carbon storage, just like our healthy forests can be. So it cuts across all of those things. So we're trying to work, bring people together, because a lot of different people, no one's really responsible for all the different things that cause
it. Who's in charge of nature and the impact on it? Seriously, it really is a good question. It's part of the challenge.
Yeah, so that's what we're focusing on right now. I've been talking with a lot of different people, and hopefully fairly soon you'll hear something about an effort we're doing to pull people together to work collectively.
That's so not fair. That means you have to come back.
You
have to do the bait reveal. There's the teaser. It's like, oh my God, that kind of stuff kills me. But I want to know from your perspective, both officially as the spokesperson for the Nature Conservancy in Arizona, which is a unique set of challenges. You're right. The diversity is wonderful and it presents some unique challenges. Do you believe that we have to really have some change in policies? I was a believer that get the people to change. And then I've had some people on my show that say, that's wonderful that you're still that optimistic, Gina. Mm-hmm. In many of these cases, public policy needs to be changed to help protect us from ourselves. So how do you weigh in on that?
Well, so I think helping people make the connection, for example, the impact of the forests has a direct impact on our water supply. The impact of the crisis on the water supply through the Colorado River is now inextricably linked to, changing climate. The air pollution, the heat in our cities, all of those things are going to get worse. And the way so some people say, well, if we don't, let's wait till somebody else does something and then we'll do something. And
my, that is not a good plan.
My response is, it's sort of like in the Southwest, it's like being in a pool, an empty swimming pool, and they're filling it up with water, but you're the shortest person. It's like, how long can you hold out, right?
It's a great analogy. It's like, what are you thinking? Who would think that? People, 12 years we've got.
Yeah, we're kind of ground zero here, because the areas in the, all the models show that the areas that are hottest and driest now will only get hotter and drier. So we don't have a margin for error here. It's important in its time. So people that are interested in a healthy economy, vibrant communities, have to get serious about what it's going to take
about
to maintain
that,
those.
Which gives us life. I mean, to me, there really is a very strong case to be made for that. And when you talk about natural solutions, one of my favorite books, I'm Not Alone, it was the shot heard around the world, was the work that Paul Hawken and, quite frankly, other scientists like Catherine Wilkinson. It was a huge global effort. And Project Drawdown, what I loved about it, and I keep it in my bedroom, and when the dark side starts to take over, it's a book that really identifies about 90 solutions that are all pretty much natural solutions that are already occurring.
Yeah.
And it is what you talked about of things like the soil. So there's the forest in Arizona.
Uh-huh.
Are there other areas that, because it is true. And I remember I had someone on several years ago from the Rodale Foundation and what they are doing in terms of if you have no-till policies, if you have healthy soil, it sequesters carbon. I'd like to say a carbon is like crack to those healthy soil. They're drawing it down. They're
exactly.
feeding on it.
Yeah.
So those are great natural solutions. So the forest is one area of focus for you for a natural solution to get them back.
Yeah, we're more limited in Arizona for natural solutions because we don't really have those rich organic soils as much.
And we have a lot of deserts.
And we don't have a lot of deserts. So really, the opportunity here is more in terms of how we do two things. One is reduce the carbon that we put into the air, and the second is to mitigate that. So projections, say, in the Maricopa County are that within, a child born today, within their lifetime, We'll see 2.5 months of 110 degree temperatures or higher. That's in almost the entire summer. It will be basically unlivable if we don't take some action. So these are efforts that can be done. So we're doing some work in urban areas to try to mitigate that, and using vegetation as a way to mitigate heat today can also absorb carbon. You just have to do it smart. To balance out the water use. But in an area that's been concentrated with people like that, we actually really need to bring vegetation back into our cities. So.
Totally. And it has such a cooling effect, and it can be done in a way that's water efficient. And I know down here we have Trees for Tucson.
Right.
And TEP helps support a program. We have Tucson Clean and Beautiful, which their goal is to plant 1 million trees, so things like that. But talk a little bit more about renewable energy. I mean, you and I agree, I'm sure, from what you said, it's inevitable. I mean, it is, the country is turning to renewable energy sources. Finally, because one of the reasons is it's affordable.
Right.
Solar was so cross prohibitive. When I sat here, my friend Paul, that was the head of TEP at the time, sat here and we talked about a kilowatt hour of solar versus coal, and there was no chance. It was like, 92 cents versus like 2 cents or something. That's almost flip-flopped.
Yep.
So what about renewable energy? And are you actually taking a leadership role in convening partners around this conversation?
Yes. So that is a big piece of it, is how do we transfer from a fossil fuel-based energy system to a more renewable energy system. Part of the challenge is storage. When the wind blows, when the sun shines,
it's great.
You have lots of energy, but you know people don't just want it then; they want it all the time. So we've kind of come accustomed to when you turn on your faucet, you expect water; when you turn on your switch, you expect lights.
We do.
So we have to find a reliable way to make that conversion. So that's part of the challenge, is trying to figure out how to provide that base and storage. So some of the technologies likely that we're going to need to scale up. So right now, for example, solar panels are extraordinarily cheap compared to what they were 5, 10 years ago.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. So that part is moving ahead well. There's a lot of advancements even in areas like hydrogen, research around the role of hydrogen. So what we're trying to do is be neutral about how we get there and really promote sort of innovation and creativity about how we get there. So we don't preclude any one source of carbon-free energy from taking hold. So
we have to look at all of them.
I think we really do.
We really do.
Yeah.
Because we need all of them.
Yeah. So then the question is, how do we create power reliably? So we're going to be looking at that question to say, what can we do and put in place? And the other part is, you think, well, some of the technologies that we're going to need to, you know, that aren't really cost-effective right now, like battery storage, with all the people that are working on them, we would expect that within, say, the next 5 years, there's going to be some kind of a breakthrough, right?
Not
sooner. So how do we build a system that is able to make that switch when that technology arrives? So part of it isn't just what can we do today, but the decisions we make today, how can we do them so we can be able to incorporate? Because one of the big complaints that people have is sort of that question, they call it stranded cost, but it's like you build something or you buy a gas-powered car and
right.
then they come up with a great electric one and you say, well, you know, I don't want to, I want to drive this until I get my money out of it. Well, it's the same thing with a power plant.
Right.
So if you build a new one, it says, well, okay, I'll switch in 20 years after this wears out. Well, we need to get to a situation where we're making decisions today that will allow for that new technology that comes online to be plugged in. So it's exciting, really. It's a great opportunity. So again, innovation, creating a goal out there, an aspiration, and getting everybody to see business leaders, you know, communities, everybody across the board, that it's in their best interest to be thinking about how they can contribute to solving this problem or how they can get behind solutions.
And one of the things that I respect and admire is that your organization is helping to make the economic sense, because it has to make economic sense.
It
just can't be for the greater good. I would love it if that was the case. That's very airy-fairy. It's not. It has to make practical and economic sense. And I think we're seeing more and more of that.
Yeah, I think one of the concerns, for example, is disadvantaging low-income people. As we see in, not to make generalizations, but if you look in a lot of the places that are most impacted in urban areas by heat and you lay over income over it, they smack dab lay right over the top of each other. And a lot of that's because of the lack of vegetation. Well, you know, if we do things that drive up energy rates, then that's disproportionately affecting people that have less income to pay for that. So we just have to be thoughtful of the whole system, and how do we do it in a way that doesn't, the very people you might be trying to help might
hurt them,
be hurt
right,
in some
right.
other way. So that's just part of, it's not an obstacle. It's just something that needs to be
considered. In the equation,
yeah,
always. I totally agree.
Yeah.
It's funny that we had a guest on yesterday from New York, and he has a company called Farm One, and we so thoroughly enjoyed the show. Huh. And when you talk about the connectivity, they do vertical farming in New York City, in Tribeca, in a 1,200 square foot basement, which prime real estate, even if it's a 1,200 in Tribeca, you know, a garage is high real estate. But Rob Lang was talking about one of the highest costs for vertical farming, and they supply things that you and I never heard of. I know I never heard of, to the highest end restaurants, fresh herbs, fresh flowers, fresh lettuces. I was, you know, Googling some of these things and saying, is that really edible? But the highest cost is the LED lighting.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, as we both know, the cost continues to come down, which will help them expand. They would like to do not just for high-end restaurants.
Right.
He said, we realize that, but they give back to the community in other ways. So energy, all these innovations help, and it's a great business that he has.
Yeah.
So it's a green business. And they're using LED lights. So when you talk about that connectivity, mm-hmm. it's everywhere.
Yep.
You can't isolate it.
Yeah, no, that's very true. And, you know, the other thing that, and that's where, for example, hydrogen probably doesn't have a role universally just because of some of the challenges
right,
of managing
right.
hydrogen. But if you think about it in concentrated, in areas where you can manage it, that doesn't use up space and it doesn't use up resources.
I know. We've got to look more at that. I could not agree with you more. It's got to be talked about more.
Yeah.
So my husband has been saying that for 10 years. Seriously. He's like, why don't people talk more about hydrogen?
Yeah, we are looking at that, too, because
I think
ultimately
innovation, that's
the best. The one thing I would add, too, is we're California has adopted a 100% clean energy goal by 2050. Very ambitious, especially for, I think they used over 40% of the energy in the West. So it's a hugely ambitious. But so one of the things that Nature Conservancy is doing is evaluating what would the impact be if they built that, if they solved that all through renewable energy, where would it all go? You think of all the land that would be covered with wind farms and solar farms. And so can it be done in a way that doesn't compromise some of the most ecologically important areas? So again, this spring, we'll be releasing that study to help guide those kind of decisions. So there's just, that's another one of those things that when you're doing good, sometimes you can inadvertently do harm.
And you have to think it through.
You do.
I mean, you think about that. I didn't. It's a great solution, but when you think about the land that it will take, especially for solar farms, it's incredible. So I believe, obviously, this is almost like ridiculous. I can't say it without laughing. I believe that talking about climate change is important because I live my life doing it.
Yeah.
You should be at some of the dinner parties, and I'll start, and they'll say, don't get her started because she's not going to be, you can't stop her. But educating people and raising awareness, It educates in and of itself. That's a goal.
Right.
But it also helps to find solutions and helps to build bridges. What is the Nature Conservancy doing in that area in terms of getting words out, getting the word out? And we need the people and we need more bridges. So what type of leadership can you share with us in that arena? Because I know that you do things all the time.
Yeah, so there's a couple ways to answer that question, but I'm going to start with... one of the best ways to communicate to people is through projects that tell stories.
Oh my gosh, Pete, so, that is so true. That's everybody can hear it then.
Yeah, they're listening and they're like, huh. And, it's how do you cut through all of this stuff to get people's attention? So we've got a project up on the Verde River north of, on the way up to Flagstaff, where, increased demand is drawing down flow in the river. So, and there's farming. And historically, what we would have done is we would have bought out the farming, shut it down. Somebody used to refer to it as buying and drying. And, that does a couple of things. One, it takes that land out of farming production and drives that production somewhere else. But it also kind of really affects the local community and their perception of us and the whole nature conservation movement. So today what we're doing is we're working with those farmers. And in this particular case, we went to the farmer and said, okay, what if you converted from a high water use crop to a cool season low water use crop?
What a concept in the Southwest.
Well, so they said, well, we'll give it a try. As it turned out, to convert 100 acres, he would lose $100,000 a year in revenue, because the corn and the alfalfa just were that much more valuable. So the first couple of years, just to test the concept, we went out and got some corporations that had sustainability goals to help us make that payment, right?
Right, right.
But that's really not a scalable
model.
That's
not sustainable. It isn't.
Financially sustainable.
Right.
So we said, well, what could we do with that crop that could actually add value to it? So working with a local entrepreneur up there, we invested in a malt house. And so we're able to take that cool season, low water use barley crop, turn it into malted barley, and it's now being sold into craft brewers in the Phoenix metro area. And
which are like Walgreens.
Right.
I hate to use that analogy, but they're everywhere.
They're everywhere.
And Touche.
Yeah.
Most of them are locally owned, and it's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Really wonderful. But what about, is it in the Cottonwood area? I just have to ask
you. It's in Camp Verde.
Okay, Camp Verde, because that's one of our favorite go-to spots, James and I, and taking the train and the growth up there and the wineries.
Right.
I mean, it really is hot, hip, and happening, depending upon when you go. It's like, it's a thing.
Yeah.
You have to reserve weeks in advance.
Right.
And who ever heard of Cottonwood? Well, lots of people.
Yeah.
Really fun playground for people from Phoenix.
Yep.
But it's one of our favorite spots to go. So that's very encouraging. And that'll help them grow more.
Right. Well, it's a great story to help people understand how you can have a healthy economy and a healthy environment,
yes,
too.
Yes, so. Everybody wins. Yeah. What about Phoenix? Talk about a heat island, an urban area, one of the fastest growing cities in the country. It's already, is it the fifth largest? I mean, it's growing like crazy.
Yeah, it's the fifth largest, and it's also the hottest.
No kidding.
And it's the fifth most polluted. A lot of that's from ozone, so that's an interplay with heat. And so... What we've been doing is pulling people together from the universities, other nonprofits, local communities to develop a plan to mitigate that, to use vegetation to offset the impacts of heat in the urban areas. And that really requires working closely with the local communities. Nobody likes less than somebody coming in and telling them what's good for them. So we start by building trust and relationships in local communities and saying, how can we serve you? And so far, we got three pilot projects in some of the most impacted areas to try to use vegetation to mitigate heat and air pollution.
It's so important. I mean, that's where drawdown, just green roofs, I mean, and living walls and planting trees and people who have apartments putting things out in their on their patio.
Right.
Every little bit helps. That's what I like about this whole movement. If you don't think there's anything you can do, you're probably wrong.
Right.
There are little things that you can do, or adopt trees and, you know, sponsor trees being planted. It's a great thing. So Phoenix is really, talk about a hot spot. You are in much demand, my friend, because your work will never be done. What about let's just wrap up by talking about water, because it is the only thing that we cannot live without as human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the Salt River, we have the Verde River. What are you doing in terms of water alliances? Is there exciting news to share in that regard? Because we don't have much.
Right.
I know down here it's the Santa Cruz, and there's a lot of interest and focus and excitement about, you know, just stormwater management and groundwater reclamation. It's a big deal here. And we've got some, you know, we've got Living Streets Alliance and the Watershed Management Group. We've got Brad Peterson, for heaven's sake.
Right,
so
right.
It's like we're doing things. So what about the Nature Conservancy's work in that arena?
Yeah, well, it touches almost everything that we do. The work in forests is directly related to water. By thinning our forests, we can actually increase the water by 25%, just from getting it back to a more natural condition.
Like I want to ring the bell.
Yeah,
by 25%, restoring it to its natural condition.
You can increase water. So because there's lots of reasons for why that is, but so getting that right. So you need to start at the source. And then moving downstream, the work with the farmers and the communities to say, how do we thrive as communities with less water and use our water in ways that, for example, the crops. He's now using less water in the part of the year that has the least amount of damage on the stream. So trying to be creative down on the San Pedro River, working with the communities and building water replenishment projects. Taking the very runoff from those communities and recharging it into the ground. Naturally, on that land up there, only about 2% of the water that comes down actually makes it into the groundwater, 2%.
Wow.
So if you could double that to 4%, you've doubled the amount of water going. So all you need to do is you capture it and slow it down, get it to infiltrate into the ground. And but if you put it in the wrong location, it'll never get to the river. You put it in the right location, you can see almost immediate results. So those are just different ways of using existing technology that's smart for the environment. So it doesn't have to cost an arm and a leg.
Everybody wins.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably 10 years ago, it's such a blur to me, and the fact that we've been doing this for a decade. We had my friend Dave Cohen on the show who was educating me about a product called Back to Feed.
Uh-huh.
And he talked about using it on farms in Yuma. And they've just made tremendous progress in using it on golf courses. And of course, for me, you know, my background was in social services and here I am. But the evolution of Mrs. Green and our team and what we've learned, I didn't really understand that all those insecticides, pesticides, herbicides, fertilizers, they stop the soil from doing its natural thing. So back to feed was like an organism that you put in the soil that restored it. And then the water is actually absorbed, so you need less. Right. Yep. And that's a way that we can move forward. The yields in Yuma were significantly different by having healthy soil that you didn't need chemical fertilizers for.
Right.
It was doing the natural thing. So I'm thrilled that you came. I'm so glad that you came to the studio because last time I think it was on, we did it by phone. I'm not sure. It was a phone interview I was down here. So the last word from Mrs. Green is, as a mission-based organization, we are committed to raising awareness about every aspect of climate change imaginable. This is yet another one of our shows that helps to remind us that there are organizations out there fighting the good fight, working hard to protect our land, our wildlife, our rivers, and our forests, and in turn, us. The Nature Conservancy is an organization that I have respected and supported in various ways for over 40 years, and little did I know the significance and importance that the work they have been doing for a very long time would be so critical to the health of our planet today. Remember that our theme for this year is 12 Years to Change, and we hope you get on board with taking action, any kind of action that reflects your commitment to a healthy and socially just planet. I invite you to do some research into the important work of the Nature Conservancy and consider involvement with them in ways that are a fit for you. Thanks, everybody, for being a part of our world. And remember, we always have two great shows coming up that I always like to forward promote. On March 5th, Jaden Lynn, California Indian Museum and Cultural Tribal Youth Leader. Wow. We heard this person speak at Bioneers last fall, and get ready to be wowed. And our next Down to Earth show is Adriana Angulo and Kristen Williamson to talk about Habitat for Humanity's National Women's Build Week. You know I love that. So Pat, thank you for all your work. Keep it up. We need you. I want to do a high tribute, a big high five to Tucson Electric Power Company, their energy efficiency programs. They're highlighting the important work that you do. It really matters. It sends a big message that a utility company is doing something like this. So I want to give an extra special thanks and shout out to them because they are doing a lot of good work in and around the Southwest. And is there anything you want to add, Pat?
Thank you so much. Their leadership is terrific. To have an organization like them stand up and highlight work like this, plus the work they do as an organization, is critical. So shout out to Tucson Electric.
Shout out to TEP. We want to say thank you. So that really is the last word. Thanks, everybody.